Hey there, this is Adam. We've got one more strange, unusual, out of the ordinary for us podcast for you before things really snap back to grid here. So this is episode 201. It was actually recorded before episode 200 using Google Plus as a trial to make sure that we weren't going to completely botch things when we decided to do 200. So this was recorded on June 8th. And there's a YouTube for it. On YouTube, it's labeled Punk News Podcast, episode 199.5. So if you want to watch all of our smiling faces as we talk, you can go check that out. Otherwise, this is the Punk News Podcast. Hey, we're live.
Live, yeah.
It's live.
Live. Yeah. Welcome back to episode 201 of the Punk News Podcast. Tonight we're going to do something a little unusual, just like last week. If everything went according to plan, and we're not sure, because we're actually recording this before the big, the jumbo, the monstrous episode 200. This is episode 201. We're just chilling back, you know, because we're recording this before episode 200 to make sure everything goes smoothly next week. So even though you heard episode 200 last week, this was recorded before that, but we're running it afterwards, so there's not a break in the podcast. I hope you followed that, and if you didn't, it's cool because we're just hanging out this week. We're just chilling. We're going to have a shorter podcast, talk about a few things that aren't necessarily related to a specific week. We're just going to chill back, hang out, and have a good time. And having a good time with us here is, first of all, the guy that's been at Punk News the second longest after the founder. We are here with the baby-making machine, Adam White. Adam White, how you doing today?
Oh God, why was that my introduction?
Baby-making machine? Are you not proud of your baby creation abilities?
Yeah, I am, but like I have one, like a factory production line or anything like that.
Well, I mean, look at this, like when they build giant cranes, like the machine that they use to build it, it only builds one. So I mean, building one is sufficient to label something. A
okay,
machine.
Sure. Yeah, all right, if we want to get really pedantic about the use of the word machine. Yeah, hi, okay, sure, that's me.
And we are also here with a guy that's been here, I think, fourth longest at Punk News. We are here with Greg Simpson.
Yes.
Greg, you just got Circle Jerks Group Sex. Have you listened to it? And was it the 25th best album you ever heard or the 24th best album you ever heard?
Dude, I just felt like...
best album you ever heard?
I just bought like 30 CDs for like $10.
Yeah, most of them were whack. You got like Janet Jackson.
I've been listening to some straight edge hardcore for some reason. It's
like what?
Fun.
Chain of Strength.
Youth of Today.
Youth of Today.
Yeah, and Gorilla Biscuits.
Gorilla Biscuits are cool.
Yeah.
And we are also here with Christopher Barrett, the guy that married his high school sweetheart, who shows up randomly on our podcast to mock him before running away in a stream of giggles and laughter. Christopher Barrett, how are you doing? I guess, Christopher Barrett, you're an interviewer, correct?
Thank you.
Yeah, some call me that. Yeah, I talk to people. I write about people, you know, throw in the occasional review, and the lady will come and go as she pleases. So if something catches her ear, I guess you'll see a cameo.
So, Chris, you know, you've been married to your high school sweetheart for how long now? 8 years? Well, been going out with your high school sweetheart for how long?
Well, we've been together since 2001, so this is going on 13. Yeah. Like
so that. What is the key to keeping the spark in the relationship, Chris?
Just letting her win all the arguments.
Come on.
Well, Jeff Foxworthy, thank you for the input. We are also here with...
You know you're happily married when she wins all the arguments.
We are also here with one of the newest additions to the Punk News Podcast.
Okay, I win some, so...
No.
That's Christopher Barrett's wife. Well, she's her own person. Samantha Barrett, come here. Say hello to the Punk News listeners.
Yeah, Sam, come back. You know, well, I got the headphones on, so she can only hear when I'm sort of trolling her. But
Stop trolling.
So that's Samantha Barrett. Christopher Barrett and Samantha Barrett work as an interviewing team.
Which is
delightful, to say the least. Also, we are here with someone who next week will be able to buy cigarettes on his very own. We are here with reviews writer Ricky Frankel, going to be 16 next week. We're all real happy for him. He's going to get his driver's license and everything. Ricky, are you excited to get your learner's permit?
Oh, you know, I got it when I was 15, so I'm 22, but whatever.
And, of course, we are here with – lastly, we are here with the guy doing his second-to-last podcast. Let's all give a big round of a hand for the guy that puts this whole thing together, the guy that keeps this ship running smooth, tight, hard, and fast. Let's give a round of applause for Sound Guy Nairman.
Hey, guys.
And so let's get this week's podcast started. I mean, we're not going to talk about a whole lot because it's just like a test podcast. So the first story of this week's podcast, I think it's the Beastie Boys, isn't it? I'm not even looking at the thing right now.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, the Beastie Boys, they won their lawsuit against Monster, and I couldn't be happier. In case the Punk News listeners don't know, in 2012, the Beastie Boys sued Monster Energy Drink. The reason they sued Monster Energy Drink is because Monster Energy Drink put a commercial up on their website for some festival where they played four Beastie Boys songs, and apparently they even released for free a 25-minute mix of Beastie Boys songs. The problem was all this was done without the Beastie Boys' authorization, which is copyright infringement. So, and what made it doubly kicker is at the end of the ad, they put RIP MCA. The problem was that MCA, who had died like just like a week beforehand or something, explicitly put in his will that he did not want his music to be used for commercial purposes following his death. So it was a real kick in the balls for MCA's family. So the Beastie Boys sued him, and they won $1.7 million for copyright infringement claims and false association claims, which I'm happy about. Monster says they're going to appeal. Monster says they're only entitled to $125,000, but that's because Monster are a bunch of bullshit assholes. So are you guys happy the B-Boys won? What's going to happen with this Monster thing? And do you think that Monster was acting evil or just stupid by using the Beastie Boys tunes without their authorization?
Stupid.
Yeah, stupid.
We're just gonna have one word answers to everything on here.
I'm confused about one thing, John. How did they come to 1.7 million from 2.5 million?
I'll tell you exactly how. It was a jury trial, which is smart for the Beastie Boys. In this kind of situation, you'd always want a jury trial instead of a judge trial. And I explained this on a podcast a little while ago. If you have your copyright registered in the federal copyright office, you can automatically get $150,000 without even proving any damages at all per work infringed. So four or six works times $150,000 is $900,000, right? Mm-hmm. On top of that, they've got false association claims, which is its own tort. And on top of that, you can get punitive damages. So obviously, I would think the jury was probably trying to punish Monster because they were acting so reprehensibly. So how did punitive damages work? Here's how punitive damages work. The jury picks a number and says, that's enough to punish this person. Then it gets appealed, it goes up to the Court of Appeals, and the judge says, yeah, that number seems fair, or the judge cuts it down in half, or whatever he wants to cut it down by. But it's always one half or one third. So.
Okay.
So do you think they will be reduced on the appeal?
Punitive damages can get reduced on the appeal. Punitive damages cannot get increased on appeal.
Okay.
So what's going to happen is Monster says, we're going to appeal, we're going to appeal. And so the Beastie Boys will say, all right, listen, just give us a million and we'll let it go. You know, and that's what's going to happen.
Mm.
What I thought was interesting is a lot of people were like, you know, I hope the Beastie Boys donate this to charity, which I don't see why. The Beastie Boys have done way more for charity than 99.9% of all other bands. But why should the Beastie Boys have to give any of this money to charity? I mean, they were damaged by this. Clearly, it damaged their name and their career and was an insult. And, you know, I mean, I would have sued for intentional infliction of emotional distress. So why do people think that the Beastie Boys should give money to charity? Give this money to charity. I don't see why at all. I mean, they were harmed.
Well, in memory, for one. I mean, it was his wish to, it was in his will, right? Like, to not have their stuff used, so.
Yeah, but the other Beastie Boys were damaged, too, because their music was used without authorization.
Yeah, I think some people may feel like, you know, publicly it might be a good move to donate to a cause that they could agree on.
But why should they?
I guess you could argue why isn't it a good idea unless they feel that, you know.
I'll tell you why it's not a good idea, because they were damaged and they should be compensated for that. It's not like somebody just needed $1.7 million. Monster made it look like the Beastie Boys endorsed Monster, and people probably still think Beastie Boys do, even though they don't, and, you know, put all this crap up and gave away their music for free. That's damage. They're entitled to be compensated for that.
So do you think by donating the money that it technically it will make it look like, well, they weren't quite as damaged if they were able to give it away to an organization?
Well, actually, yes, I do feel that would appear that way, but I don't think that would harm the Beastie Boys at all. But, I mean, the Beastie Boys have done so much for charity, for Tibet, for homeless people, all these different things, and people are like, if the Beastie Boys don't give this to charity, they're jerks. The Beastie Boys have done way more for charity than almost every other person in the world. Like, you know, Beastie Boys have done more for charity than 99% of the world population. So why should they be entitled to be compensated for the damage they've suffered? That's my point.
Well, I wouldn't say they're jerks if they don't do it.
Well, but people are, though.
Yeah.
In the end, it's their money, so...
That's what I'm saying.
Who cares?
Maybe even at 15, Ricky understands financial...
They're going to go out and buy, like, 100 cases of Monster.
Oh, I wouldn't drink that shit ever.
Man, I have one
looks
today.
Disgusting.
It was delicious.
So I would be more inclined to buy the, you know, they need to donate the money to charity angle if let's say this was even like the Goldilocks case that where they're having, where the money is coming from a party that was misguided as they were trying to promote some sort of message. Like, if let's say the Beasties won a bunch of money from that one, and they were to say, you know what, we're going to take the money that we won from Goldilocks and we're going to give it all to charities that teach, you know, science, technology, and math to girls or something like that. Then, okay, that kind of makes sense. But, Monster has no cause. It's not like you're bleeding away money from a worthy thing. Like, fuck Monster. Like, why do they...
Dream.
Why is that money... Like, you know, they should just take it and build like solid gold houses out of it. Who cares? You know, give a share of it, you know, to MCA's family, and then what else is there to do with it? Like, it's not like Monster is going to use that money for any good. I assume.
I agree.
That money.
Those motocross races aren't going to fund themselves.
And another part of it is just that, you know, Monster, just given the size of the company that they are, they can pay this. You know, they're not going to go into arrears because they can't, you know, pay $1.7 million for this fuck up.
Yeah, well, I've dealt with these kinds of attorneys before. They're saying that the Beastie Boys are only entitled to $125,000, which is ridiculous, because statutorily they're entitled to $600,000 at minimum. So it's... And it turned, like, I guess it's frustrating or even disheartening when attorneys that represent large corporations that have done bad things, basically just try to out-muscle you and do bad things and say, because we're a bigger company, we can do bad things and you can't stop us. So I hope the Beastie Boys really stick it to them.
Well, I actually, John, I actually, when I, believe it or not, I was old enough to intern for a corporate mediator. And what I noticed what these guys would do is just purposely lowball the shit out of people.
The mediator would?
No. Like they're the two sides.
Well, that's how negotiation works, though.
Yeah, I mean they would just, I mean just ridiculous things, really high, really low. So I feel like there could be some bullying in there. I get you.
Mm-hmm. On a side note, as I've worked with judicial mediators, that's current and ex judges that mediate lawsuits. That's where you try to come to an agreement, a settlement agreement. What do you guys think judges or mediators, legal mediators, make per day?
Oh, I know.
Naaman, get
answer. Answer.
$5,000.
Adam White, what do you think they make?
What do they make per day?
Yeah.
Like per job that they're on, or per hour?
Per job.
Oh God, I don't know. This is so far out of my ballpark. $5,000 and a dollar.
At least $15 an hour.
Chris, what do you think they make?
I'll go for the nice thousand a day.
$15,000.
Damn. Oh,
really?
Yeah.
The guy I worked for was making $7,000 a day.
$7,000.
Which is still crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. And if any of you guys want to jump on and drive the story, you can as well. But this story is near and dear to my heart. It is at a recent meeting of the Austin Music Convention, James Moody, who runs the venue called the Mohawk, kind of made a joke at a meeting, but somehow it stuck on. It might become an actual reality. He, at the meeting, he suggested that the area makes a golden statue of Danzig riding a dragon to welcome visitors to the Red River Musical District. Although it was a joke, it actually made it onto the group's future goals, and you can see it on the Punk News website where it says future goals. James Moody, statue of Danzig riding a dragon welcoming visitors to the RRCD, and presumably they're going to vote on this. Now, obviously, this actually, what do you guys think the chances are of this thing actually getting voted in to creation? And is this not the best thing ever? Because I'm pro. I think every city should have a golden Danzig statue.
I just want to say that the commenters originally misread the headline completely.
Yeah.
Read the first comment and you'll see.
A statue of Danzig's erection.
Do you guys think that the title had some sort of double entendre? Erection of Danzig statue on Austin organization's to-do list.
Erection of Danzig's erection.
That could work.
It would be wonderful if this could happen, only because then there'd be more whimsy in the world. We would help.
Pro whimsy, baby.
You know, then it would be better for everyone. I got to imagine that this is probably one of those things where, you know, some poor person during a giant meeting that involved lots of people had to take the minutes, and because this was brought up in some capacity, it ended up in the minutes, and then, you know, that was sent out in an email to like 45 different people and was like, here's the minutes in the last meeting, does anyone have anything to add? And everyone deleted that email because no one reads that shit, and then all of a sudden it's on the internet. So that's what I'm guessing, which means no, there will probably not be a giant statue of Danzig riding a dragon. I mean, there should, but there probably won't. I imagine at some point someone will step in and decide they don't have the budget for that.
Does anyone else want to believe? I want to believe this. I want to believe it's going to happen.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic. I mean, it's outside like the music district, like the district with all the bars and venues, I assume, right? And it's Austin, so it seems like if it's going to happen anywhere, it would happen in Austin.
I was just there a week ago.
Yeah. It was, you know, there are definitely areas of town that would have benefited from Danzig riding a dragon.
Had you gone to record shops in Austin?
Pardon me?
You go to any record shops in Austin?
I only got out to Waterloo.
How was it?
It was good. I have a big stack of vinyl that I didn't need to buy, but I did.
What'd you get?
Oh, we can do like visual show and tell, can't we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hold on.
Oh, and I went to a punk rock flea market on Saturday. We'll compare and contrast. Let me grab my records.
I doubt you got more deals than I did.
Well, John's going to get his records. Will we have enough time to see all the records he purchased?
That is probably not. So we're waiting for John now. just hang out.
He just left. He's gonna, you know, podcast's gonna turn to 3 hours when he's gonna show us all the records.
He could just say the whole, you know, Crass discography and then be done with it.
were you guys talking about me when I was gone?
No. Not
we were mocking you.
Okay, I already own the Crass discography, though.
Well, you buy it again because they reissued it, right?
I bought the CDs. I bought all the CDs again.
There you go.
See? Okay, John, I'm going to save the last one for you because you'll be the only one who will appreciate this. But you'll appreciate it.
Chumbawamba? Right.
This has nothing to do with it, but I came home and like the reissue of the Constantine Shine a Light was in the mail, which is really cool. So I'm happy about that. It comes with this little extra 7-inch in here that has like some stuff that they pressed specifically for the reissue, which is neat. And the other thing, which is neat, this still has nothing to do with my trip to Austin, but they hold on.
Adam White has left the room, people.
He's just ducked.
You've Changed Records, which is the record that which is the record label in Canada that released this re-released this thing. Sub Pop did it in the U.S. They're having their 5-year anniversary, so they put together this like really slick little like zine. About themselves and about like the 5-year anniversary that's in there, and the zine is about the size of like a 7-inch, so it actually goes really nicely on a shelf. But anyway, so that has nothing to do with my trip, but that was that was there. So this was mostly new stuff that I bought just because I didn't have it, and I don't get the record stores because I live in the middle of nowhere. So Obvious was that.
Oh yeah, Obvious, yeah.
Which is the 2-disc one. Which is what we want.
Adam White, if you're just listening and not watching at home, Adam White just showed the new version of F Dup's new record, Last Boys, which we reviewed at Punk News, and we reviewed the slow version, and Ricky Frankel reviewed the 7-inch.
Yes. Oh, I guess, yeah, people might be not looking at this. They may actually be listening, so we should say
fun fact, I'm naked, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. That's probably hard to see.
I want to know where you got your shirt.
Yes.
Adam. Oh.
That's the New Crusades. We'll talk about my shirt in a minute. That's the New Crusades record, which is great and came out last year and was on a bunch of lists. It was on my list. It was on the only list that matters.
Fantastic.
There's that. This I just didn't own on vinyl, and I really wanted it because I like it a lot. It's Caution, Hot Water Music.
Yes.
So there's that.
John Gentile's favorite record.
John Gentile's favorite record, the Radioactivity record.
Toe Thumping.
Members of the Marksmen. Dirt Nap released, so that's good. You should listen to that.
Dirt Nap's a cool record label, man. They put a lot of good stuff.
I just vinyled my headphones out of my ears here. And so, John, the one that you would like would be this.
Oh, yeah, Public Image.
Yeah, it's like the American... Specifically, the American reissue, although they're calling it the first American edition because it was never officially released in the U.S., of first issue, the first Public Image Limited record. And it came with a ton of shit. So it's like one of those 180-gram open deals. But hold on here. There's like a poster in here. There's a whole bunch of like crazy zine material. It came with like 5 or 6 different like pieces of... pill literature and stuff
that's
like that,
cool.
That are in here. There was stickers in here. There's apparently, and I don't have the little note that came on it with me right now, I don't actually know if it's in here or if it's just part of the download that came with it, but there's like a huge interview from 1978 that's on there and
that's cool.
A B-side or something like that. And just like, this is just a really nice, like all of like, even like the sleeves and everything are all done really cool. It's a great little thing if you like pill.
Does it have a playbill for Jesus Christ Superstar?
It was canceled after it was...
Let's talk about that right now, actually. Jesus Christ Superstar, starring John Lydon and one of the girls from Destiny's Child, and let's see what else. A couple other people. Oh, we didn't have that on the list. I thought we had that on the list. Oh, I guess we did. Maybe we talked about it last week. Yeah, Jesus Christ Superstar was canceled. I think we talked about that last week. I was bummed out because I really wanted to go. At the Punk Rock Flea Market, here's what I got, baby. I got Manitoba's Wild Kingdom. This is Dick Manitoba and Andy Chernoff of The Dictators, album from 1990. It's actually really, really, really good.
Nice.
I got Funkadelics, Uncle Jam Wants You, Funkadelic doing dance music. This is... not one of their better albums, but it's pretty good. It's Funkadelic being awesome. I got Rollins Band, the OG Press of Lifetime. I gotta say, I've begun to recently reevaluate Rollins Band's early records. I was never a huge fan. Well, actually, I like a Hot Animal Machine, but Lifetime and Do It are great records. And speaking of Do It, I got Tomorrow. You guys might not know what Tomorrow is, but Tomorrow is the oh, it's upside down. Tomorrow is the band that featured Twink of the Pink Fairies, the guy that originally wrote Do It. He was in the Pink Fairies. He was briefly a member of the Deviants. He's probably the connection between punk rock and hippies in England. The Damned are big fans. New York Dolls are big fans. We've got a cool interview with him at punknews.org. And continuing on with the Henry Rollins connection, for $1, I got a Trouble Funk EP. Trouble Funk was a go-go band in the late 70s, early 80s in Washington, D.C. It's very hard-driving, very funky funk music. All the songs are like 9 minutes long. I got, second and last thing, Slayer, the Netherlands Press of Show No Mercy with Aggressive Perfective. Badass record. If you don't know Slayer, you need to check out Slayer. Last thing that I got.
Are they an emo band?
Last thing that I got was a band that is sadder, darker, more depressing than all the emo bands put together. I got the repress of Rudimentary Penis, Pope Adrian's 37th Psychiatric. If you don't know Rudimentary Penis, you need to check them out. They're one of the original anarcho-punk bands, but they sort of invented death rock, and they're definitely one of the 10 best bands ever. So, did anybody else get any hot new records this weekend? Let's keep this podcast moving along.
Yes. Are we interested in compact discs?
Yeah.
All right, I'll be right back.
I heard they were drink coasters, and nothing more than that.
You guys get anything cool, Ricky or Chris?
I mean, I finished my Choking Victim collection.
Oh, nice. What'd you get?
I finally got... the hardest one was Choking Victim Comes Alive.
Yeah, well, that's the rarest one. That's hard.
That one took me forever, and I finally got it at a decent price. Some guy on eBay was asking $100 for it. I would not pay that.
Nah.
And then, John, I don't know if you heard about this, but Krig Blast had a 7-inch out.
Yeah. I saw that.
And I got the I got number 8 of 66 on white vinyl.
That's cool. Yeah, if the listeners don't know, Krieg Blast is a band that Scott Sturgeon of Leftover Crack and Choking Victim is in. It's kind of a DB band. They're from Austin. Greg, we're not going through all those CDs. You can pick three.
Are you considering Krieg Blast part of the Crack Rock Steady stuff?
Nah.
Okay.
All right. I'll tell you what, because the band isn't driven by Scott Sturgeon. He's just a member. I don't even know if he writes much of the music.
Yeah. Look out for that review, too, everyone.
All right, Greg, what do you got?
It's my turn. Okay, I got Talking Heads.
That's good.
That makes sense. I got Billie Holiday, Lady in Satin.
That's good.
Some Benny Goodman album.
That's good. Greg, you're doing all right so far. Where's all your whiny music that you always
listen to? Some 80s Bowie.
American Football.
Let's Dance. That's a good album.
Lieutenant Zorkstra.
That's good.
Gorilla Biscuits.
That's good.
Breeder's Pod. Yes. Thelonious Monk.
Are you naming bands?
Wilco. Am I going too fast for you? Sleater-Kinney.
Greg, you can pick two more. You can pick two more.
I think you're going steps too slow.
Bikini Kill. A bunch of Kink stuff. What else?
All right, let's move this podcast along, because Greg wants to show his entire collection.
I think it was way less Greg than I thought it would be.
Game of Thrones.
They're a quarter piece.
Game of Thrones is on.
All right, well, let's wrap this up then. If you guys want to watch Game of Thrones, let's talk about. We can end with this story right here. It's a sad story, but what are you going to do? The cause of Dave Brocky's death has been determined. It turns out that Dave Brocky died of a heroin overdose. Listeners probably know Dave Brocky was the lead singer of Guar. He died suddenly about 2 or 3 months ago now. No one saw it coming, and it was quite a shock, and the punk rock community is reacting. I don't know if there's a whole lot you can say about it, except that it's sad, and man, I mean, it bums me out that heroin killed Dave Brocky, because he was a phenomenal talent. So, like I said, kids, stay away from drugs. Drugs are not a good thing to do.
Agreed.
Yeah, you brought up a bummer story that we can't actually debate. But I mean, it's
We'll close on a happy.
In a way, it's good that we have some finality on this, because I know there was maybe this is just you, John, but there was a little while where people were saying that, like, is this whole thing like a hoax or?
Yeah, if you mean there's this whole thing, it was me being so sad about the death of Dave Brocky, I was grasping at any straw that it might all be a hoax. Because honestly, I'm not trying to steal your reply here, but man, I'm a huge fan of Gwar. I love Gwar. And they're so fun. I had so much fun listening to them, interviewing them, seeing them live. And now the whole thing is tainted by a veneer of sadness, if you will. You know?
It's good that I guess everyone knows what happened, but it sucks. So yeah, I don't really know where I'm going with this. I feel bad for you, John.
Well, thank you. But I actually, we should mention this. Would it be? I guess we don't need to talk about it, but let me just put it this way. Dave Brocky's family overcame many, many struggles, and if you really want to know about it, you can, you know, read his blog and stuff and read all about it, but the amount of hardship that his family overcame is amazing, and so this is just another one, which is sad, you know.
Yeah.
Let's close on a happy story, then, unless anybody else had to say about that. All right, happy story. Bruce Lee Band, first show in 10 years. It's going to have Mike Huguenot. It's going to have John DeDomenici of Bomb the Music Industry. It's going to have Dan Posehn. It's going to have Jeff Rosenstock and Kevin Higuchi and Jerry Lindquist of Skank and Pickle in the Bay Area. Only U.S. show this year, they say. Bruce Lee Band is Mike Parks' third wave ska band. I think it's Mike Parks' best band. He's got a lot of bands, but I think it's Mike Parks' best band. And they're doing their only show in the U.S. in the Bay Area. If I was super rich, I would fly out to see it, but I'm not super rich, so I'm not going to. But thanks for that sound effect, Greg. I got to say, man, I'm excited. I hope Bruce Lee Band goes on a tour next year. They put out a 7-inch earlier this year, and I thought it was great. Are you guys excited for Bruce Lee Band? Is this just nostalgia, or is this Mike Parks saying, listen, people, third wave ska is not just the 90s. Third wave ska is timeless. What is it?
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. It's like my dream lineup right there. I loved ME330, and Jerry was in ME330 as well.
Oh, and, I knew that.
He was from Crab Rangoon on. I mean, he was on probably more than half of the ME330 albums, and they did the double trombone.
But he was in Skank and Pickle, though, too, with Mike.
Right. Yeah, he was in Skank and Pickle first, and then ME330. Fuck, man. I'm pretty excited. I hope they come out. The Midwest probably isn't their top priority, but that would be cool.
I mean, given that this band is made up by this kind of like revolving cast of characters around Mike, you know, if he wanted, this could be Mike's, you know, Bomb of the Music Industry. He could be, you know, the anchor tenant basically in this band and take whoever he can out on tour, out to play shows, and keep mixing up that lineup and keep going out and doing, or even if he doesn't want to go far from home, you know, there could be, you know, many regular, you know, Bay Area, you know, Bruce Lee Band shows featuring like whoever he can rope in at the time, which would be really cool. It would be great if that happened, because they're that EP is really good.
Yeah.
Does it say where they're playing?
Bottom of the Hill's
awesome.
You moved away, Ricky. Too bad you moved away like 2 weeks ago. You could have went.
I actually went to like three different shows there in 2 months, and it's a great venue. That's a fun show. That's going to be a fun show.
Fucking Californians. I hate you all.
Whoops.
We'll close out the podcast with predictions. Will we see a new era Bruce Lee Band? Will they go on tour? Or will this be one of the many Mike Park projects that flames up and goes away immediately?
No, I think, you know, this band has a following. I think this could keep going.
Yeah. I mean,
this has a strong following.
I'll wear my optimism hat and say that yeah, that could happen.
Yeah, I'll see why not. I mean, aren't people like Tom Petta around every 6 years getting a new cast of characters for Big Wig and get a few people for those shows? I mean, this seems to have more of a following than that, so why not? Yes.
I bet Dave Grohl would play in it.
I have no response.
Oh, God, Dave Grohl in a ska band? That would be rough.
He plays in everything. He would just overplay the drums like fucking just...
But would they tour on the back of a truck?
Hopefully.
Like Alice Cooper?
No, not like, I mean, didn't they, Foo Fighters have a tour a few years ago where they,
Oh, yeah.
They had a truck, and then it would open up and play a random spot or something. So
didn't they roll up in front of Westboro Baptist protesters and play, like, as, like, some sort of
Don't give John band? The lead. He's going to
run with Don't waste the energy on that now.
By the way, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Next week we'll have more regular podcasts. This was just a test. And yeah, well, thanks for listening. We'll see you all next week.
All right, take care.